Welcome back to The Blessed Business, where we discuss money and mission, helping you connect wealth to purpose. Well, I am super excited today to have the privilege of interviewing our special guest, Bob Berg, a well-known author and public speaker who is an incredible thought leader on the topics of sales, marketing, and influence. He has shared the stage with many great leaders, including former President Gerald Ford. Bob's books have sold well over a million copies. His book, The Go-Giver, co-authored with John David Mann, has sold nearly a million copies itself and has been translated into 29 languages. That's very impressive. Thank you. Frankly, if I was sent to another planet with the mission of teaching the fundamentals of business culture in another galaxy and could only take one book besides the Bible, which is important to me, obviously, The Go-Giver would be my pick. And I know that's kind of a funny example, but it's that important. So I am very appreciative of you taking the time to join us today and look forward to a conversation.
Thank you. Well, that is a wonderful, wonderful compliment. Thank you so much. I hope you know how much that means to me.
Absolutely. Yes, sir. Well, I also have a small confession to make. The way I got The Go-Giver is kind of a funny story. I was actually at a Christmas party and it was like for a men's event, like our men's group was having a Christmas party and had all the manly tools and stuff like as part of a white elephant or like Dirty Santa type game where you can, you know, swap out Christmas gifts and stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, someone had brought The Go-Giver. And I'll be honest, I traded for a pair of like really nice work gloves and a Home Depot gift card. But afterwards, I was talking to the gentleman who brought it. And I was like, I really was interested in it. The Go-Giver and about a little story about a powerful business idea. Tell me more. And he's like, well, there's the 5 laws of stratospheric success. And I was like, oh, now you've got me. So I ended up going out, buying the book. I get home. Wow. And like, I'm like over leaned up against the lamp, you know, by the nightstand. And my wife's like, why aren't you going to sleep? I was like, I can't put it down. And wow. So I got to the last chapter. I actually cried a little bit because I was like, it was just so wonderful how it all came together. It just, I love a good ending. And then my wife's like, well, I mean, if it was that for you, I've got to read it. She literally did not put it down. She read it all in one setting and loved it.
Well, that's a wonderful compliment. And, you know, my co-author, John David Mann, is really the person who made the characters and the story come alive, because I'm really much more of a how-to author. And of course, that The Go-Giver is a parable. And John is a magnificent writer and storyteller. So I've got to mention that, you know, and I love the compliment. Believe me, it just means the world to me. But I want to make sure it's not me just accepting this myself, because John is really the guy who, Absolutely. You know, made it sing.
Well, and that's what really stood out to me about it. And I'm going to give you the opportunity to kind of get a little bit more into the Go-Giver is for those that don't know what it is. But then also the 5 laws of stratospheric success. But I really do think that the way that the principles and the story and the character all it really brought the principles to life. It wasn't just, you know, a fun story. It was like, oh, that was kind of interesting. It wasn't just, okay, here's how you do this. It was both of those together in a beautiful, beautiful way. And every book that I've read that y'all have done here through the Go-Giver series has been that way. And so I am looking forward to hopefully more in the series in the future. There's surely more stories to tell. So tell us, our audience, a little bit about The Go-Giver and kind of a quick overview of what the 5 laws of stratospheric success really are all about.
Sure. The basic premise of the book is simply that shifting your focus, which is where it really all begins, shifting your focus from getting to giving. Now, when we say giving in this context, we simply mean constantly and consistently providing immense value to others, understanding that doing so is not only a nice way, a more pleasant way of conducting business, it's the most financially profitable way as well. And not for any kind of, you know, way out there woo-woo type of magical reasoning or anything. No, it really makes logical, rational sense. When you're that person who can take your focus off of yourself and place it on others, on helping them overcome their challenges, on discovering what they need, what they want, what they desire, and helping them to get it. When you can take your focus off yourself and place it on bringing them closer to happiness, people feel good about you. people want to get to know you. They like you. They trust you. They want to be in a relationship with you. They want to do business with you. If that's the situation, they certainly want to tell others about you. And when we say profitable, yes, financially, but also, you know, all across the board when you think about it, because success is not just financial. There's all sorts of elements of success, if you will. There's financial, there's physical, there's spiritual, there's mental, there's emotional, there's relational, there's, you know, also, right? And so the basic principles, which are universal laws, apply to all areas of success.
Well, that is incredible. Well, tell us a little bit about the five laws. So I've got here, I got it off of your website, the kind of the snapshot. So we've got the law of value, the law of compensation, the law of influence, and the law of authenticity, and then the law of receptivity. So tell me just a little brief snapshot about each one of those.
Sure. The law of value, which says your true worth is determined by how much more you give in value than you take in payment, which, by the way, sounds a bit counterintuitive when you first hear it, because it sounds like we're saying you don't make a profit, right? Give more in value than you take in payment. And of course, that wouldn't be a good way to do business. right. And of course, it doesn't really, it doesn't mean that. What it means is it's that we understand the difference between price and value, right? Mm. Price is a dollar figure. It's a dollar amount. It's finite. It is what it is. Value, on the other hand, is the relative worth or desirability of a thing, of something, to the end user or beholder. In other words, what is it about this thing, this product, this service, this concept, this idea, what have you, that brings so much worth or value to another person that they will willingly exchange their, in the business sense, exchange their money for this and be glad they did, while you make a very healthy profit. Quick example would be the accountant you hire to do your taxes, and she charges you $1,000. That's her fee or her price. But what value does she give you in exchange for this? Well, through her years of knowledge and work in the field, and through her willingness to, you know, to find out more about your business and what you're looking to accomplish and all the things, she's able to save you $5,000 in taxes. She saves you countless hours of time. She provides you and your family with the security and the peace of mind of knowing it was done correctly, right? So she's actually given you well over $5,000 in total value in exchange for $1,000 fee or price. She gave you more in value than she took in payment. So you feel great about it. And she also made a very healthy profit, which she should. In fact, in any free market-based exchange, and when I say free market, I simply mean no one is forced to do business with anyone else. In any free market-based exchange, there should always be two profits, the buyer profits and the seller profits, because each of them come away better off afterwards than they were beforehand. That's why a free market works so much better than any kind of central planning or socialistic. And I'm not trying to be political. I'm just saying,
I agree. Yeah.
When we respect people's rights to do business with, you know, in the way that they want to, what happens is it creates a 1+1=3, right? Instead of it being a zero sum game, having to take from someone to give to someone else, it's both sides actually win. And that creates abundance for the world around us too. The second one is the law of compensation. This says, the law of compensation says your income is determined by how many people you serve and how well you serve them. So law number one says to give more in value than you take in payment. Law number two tells us the more people whose lives you touch with the exceptional value you provide, the more money with which you'll be rewarded. So your accountant in the first example did a great job of giving more in value than she took in payment. So if you're her customer, you feel great about her, you would do business with her again, you'd refer her to others. Well, her other clients feel the same way. So our accountant is very quickly amassing what we call an army of personal walking ambassadors, right? And as her, right, it is, as she continues to add that kind of exceptional value to the lives of more and more people, her income will continue to grow and grow. Nicole Martin, the CEO in the story, told Joe, the protege, law number one represents your potential income, but law number two, the number of lives you impact, is what represents your actual value. Law number three is the law of influence. And the law of influence says your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. Now, again, this sounds counterintuitive, maybe even counterproductive at best, and maybe even Pollyanna-ish at worst, right? But you think about it, the greatest leaders you know, the top influencers, the highest producing salespeople, this is simply how they run their lives and conduct their businesses. They're always looking out for the best interest of the other person. Now, let me qualify this, though, if I may, Hunter, because I think this can be very, very easy to misunderstand. And I think it's very important. When we say, when we say place the other person's interests first, we don't mean you should be anyone's doormat.
Absolutely.
Or a martyr, or, you know, self-sacrificial in any way. Absolutely not at all. It's simply understanding that as Joe, the protege in the story, learned from several of the mentors, the golden rule of business, the golden rule of sales, the golden rule of life, well, maybe not life, but the golden rule is that is that all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. And there's no faster, more powerful, or more effective way to elicit those feelings toward you from others than by genuinely moving from what we call an I focus or me focus to an other focus. Or as Sam, one of the mentors, suggested to Joe, making your win all about the other person's win. And when you do that, when you do that and you do that on a consistent basis, you become that go-to person, you know? So that's influence. Yeah. Now, law number four is the law of authenticity. And this one says the most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself. Now, in this part of the story, Deborah, the mentor here, she shared a very important lesson that all the skills in the world, the sales skills, technical skills, people skills, as important as they are, and they are indeed very, very important, they're also all for naught if you don't come at it from your true, authentic core. But when you do, when you, as we like to say, show up as yourself day after day, week after week, month after month, people feel good about you. They feel comfortable with you. They feel safe with you. And why wouldn't they? They know who they're getting, right? They know who they're getting, and that inspires trust. Now, authenticity is a word that's so often used now, and maybe even overused, that it's almost lost some of its meaning. And I think sometimes people confuse authenticity with not having a filter. Okay, it's well, this is just who I am. Take it or leave it. Which, by the way, is a good philosophy if you don't want to have any good relationships in your life and want to be pretty much poor. Okay, great philosophy for that. But since that's not really what most of us want, and it's probably not congruent with our values, what does authenticity really mean? It simply means you act congruently with your values, right? It doesn't mean we just let it all hang out and we just don't care. And no, you know, it's like the person who says, well, I have anger issues and I yell at people a lot. And if I were to act any differently, that wouldn't be authentic of me. That's baloney. That's right. Hogwash, right? No, it simply means that person has an authentic problem that that person needs to authentically work on in order to become a better, higher, more effective version of their authentic self. So we never want to have, you know, let authenticity use that as, you know, we never want to use that as an excuse to stay where we are, but instead let it inspire us to step into our really highest nature.
Wow.
And then the law of receptivity, which is law number five. And, you know, if the law of value is the kind of foundational principle, the law of receptivity is the one that brings it all home, that brings it together. And the law of receptivity simply says the key to effective giving is to stay open to receiving. And really, this means nothing more than understanding that, yes, you breathe out, but you also have to breathe in, kind of hard to sustain life if you're not doing that, right? We breathe out carbon dioxide. We breathe in oxygen. We breathe out, which is giving. We breathe in, which is receiving. Giving and receiving are simple. Well, okay. And this is, I think, so important because of the world we live in the negative messages we get about money, about prosperity, about abundance, about business. There's so much horrible messaging out there, right? And, you know, you'd think anyone in business who does well did it on the backs of others or through some nefarious means or by, you know, well, it's a big world out there. There's people who do bad things, okay? But by and large, especially to the degree that we operate in a free market, no one's forced to buy from anyone else, right? So the only way you can earn a lot of money is to provide a lot of value to a lot of people, right? I often, when I speak at sales conferences, one of the first things I'll say is, nobody's going to buy from you because you have a quota to meet.
Right.
They're not going to buy from you because you need the money. And they're not even going to buy from you because you're a really nice person.
Right.
They're going to buy from you because they believe they'll be better off by doing so than by not doing so. And again, that's I can't think of any reason to buy from someone, from you, from me, from anyone, other than we're able to provide that. This is why John and I say that the focus has to be on providing value to others. Money is simply an echo of value. That's all it is. It's the thunder to values lightning. And so giving and receiving are not opposite concepts.
Right.
Despite the message from the world we get, giving and receiving are simply two sides of the very same coin. And they work in tandem. So it's not, are you a giver or a receiver? No, that's the false dilemma, that unnecessary use of the word or. No, you're a giver and a receiver.
Right.
But what we know, because it's universal law, it's the law of nature, it's the law of economics, that you have, the giving comes first, right? We plant before we harvest, we sow before we reap, we give before we, you know, receive. It's like Pindar, the main mentor, said to Joe, some people go up to a fireplace with the attitude of, first you give me some fire and some heat, then I'll throw on some logs and some newspaper and light a match. Or they go up to the bank, the teller, and they say, hey, I want to open up an account here, but first you give me an interest payment, then I'll make a deposit. Well, life doesn't work that way.
No.
Right? We give, and when we give abundantly, okay, when we give value to others, when that's our focus, when we provide that value to lots of others, when we place their interests first, when we come from our authentic core, we have created what we call that benevolent context for success. But now we've got to be able to receive openly and receive with gratitude.
That's really key. I think having an attitude of gratitude is fundamental to so many different aspects of our lives, and it's important. And I'll be honest, you know, probably, and I was going to ask you this, it's probably the fifth law, the law of receptivity, seems to be the one that a lot of people struggle, the true go-givers really struggle with this. And that's what I was going to say. In my own life, I seem to struggle with this. So why do you think that is for a lot of people that are embracing a lot of the go-giver principles? They're a giving person, but they're struggling to receive. What's the reasoning behind that, do you think?
I think it's very natural. And I think it's because the messaging we receive from the world around us is that you can't really be both. Either that good person, that altruistic person, or you're some greedy, horrible, right?
Right.
That either or, that what John and I call the treacherous dichotomy. I call it the false dilemma, you know, the unnecessary use of the word or. This world is filled with ors, okay? It's this or that, and it's just not true. It's a false premise that people have bought into. And you look at how, you know, from, and again, it could be it comes from everywhere with most people, from upbringing, environment, schooling, news media, television shows, movies, you know, everywhere you see, you get that message. One of my great friends, Randy Gage, who's one of the foremost teachers of abundance and prosperity, he does this great vignette about movies, how if you go to just about any, you know, top movie, a big selling movie, you'll see there that you'll see that there are typically two types of characters that are portrayed. There are the good people who are typically portrayed as poor, struggling, but happy. They're always poor, but happy. But they're always pushed on, pushed around, stepped on, stepped over, kicked by who? The evil rich people who are mean and nasty and yes. cowardly and have no soul. And I mean, he does a brilliant, beautiful vignette on this. And I love one scene he talks about from the movie Spider-Man, the original one, where Peter and Uncle Ben are talking about, you know, being poor and so forth. And Uncle Ben says, "Well, Peter, we may not be rich, but at least we're honest." Oh, what a horrible message for a kid to hear. Because what's the presupposition there? What's the premise? If you're honest, you're poor.
Right.
Okay. If you're poor,
that's what they're trying to.
Honest. But if you're wealthy, you're not honest.
Right.
Okay. So think about now, that's just a movie. No, it's pretty much every movie actually, but it's also just about every message you get.
The narrative. Okay? Yeah.
Yeah. Such as millionaires shouldn't exist. Well, why? If they're offering a good product that people willingly pay for, why shouldn't they? They do lots of great things. But again, these are just the messages we get everywhere from the time we're little kids. Okay. So of course it gets into the unconscious. The mind's a very powerful thing. And the most insidious part of all is that it is unconscious.
Right.
Right. So you get to a point where you start adding some great value to people's lives and you've put yourself in a position to be able to receive an abundance and feel great. And, you know, with that abundance, you can do a lot of good things. Not only can you, you know, support yourself and your family, you can give to charities, you can, you know, fund different things. You can do all these wonderful things in life. Okay. So, you know, the money's a means to an end, but it's important because that's the currency. We
right. Okay?
Now, so you do these things and you're in the position to receive a whole lot, but you're not thinking this consciously. But unconsciously, it's, well, wait a second. But, you know, Uncle Ben said, if I'm making a lot of money, I must have done something dishonest to get there. And my value, honesty is a high value for me. So we kind of push it away, right? Mm-hmm. Or what will my friends think of me? Or what will this, or what will I think of me? And, or am I worthy of this? Did someone early in my life tell me I wouldn't amount to anything? And it's gotten to my unconscious. I don't know. I mean, there's many reasons. We all have our own stories, right? But so that's the thing. It's unconscious. And that's why I think the best thing is to understand that it's an issue. Because until we're conscious of it being an issue, there's nothing that we can do to really overcome it. You know, there was a great, great book I read years ago when I first got into sales. It was actually published back in 1960. It was called Psycho-Cybernetics by Dr. Maxwell Maltz. It's a fancy sounding title, but it's an easy read. It's just Psycho-Cybernetics, a mind machine, basically. And it was really the first book, and it started me really in thinking about belief systems and how our beliefs really control us, right? And you know, what he basically said was we see the world in a certain way, okay? It's our, when you think of it, it's our subjective truth about right. how the world is. Doesn't mean it's the truth. It's our truth, but we right. operate according to our truth.
And it's so our paradigm.
Yeah, exactly. So if we see the world a certain way as being one of lack, well, we're going to live in lack. If we see it as being one of abundance, we're going to see it as abundance. If we see it in terms of this, we're going to see it as if we see life as being always struggling, then we're going to push away money. You know, I mean, so it goes into all that. And you know, in The Go-Giver, yeah, we talk about that a little with the law of receptivity and so forth. But there are books out there and there are people out there who specialize in prosperity thinking and abundance thinking. And, you know, they have books, they have audios, they have blogs, they speak. I think, you know, it's very important if someone feels as though they have this issue with receptivity that they proactively seek out this information, because the garbage about prosperity, the garbage, the negative messaging about it comes from everywhere.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So that comes naturally into it. So we've got to seek out the information that is going to put the right information into our heads and our hearts.
Absolutely. And to kind of piggyback off that, to kind of summarize, really, it comes back to your purpose. If you are a person that is connected to the purpose and you see, you identify your purpose as, I am a go-giver. I am contributing to society. I am doing things that matter. I am on mission, as we talk about doing business as mission. Mm-hmm. Then you're, when you receive, that is part of your purpose because it's connecting what you're doing to mission. Yes. If you're not connected to purpose, then you get sucked into the mindset of greed and I'm not good enough and all that. But when you realize the reason you're receiving, it's so that you have can accomplish your God-given purpose to do something great in the world, then that really opens you up to be able to receive, I feel like.
Wonderful. That's absolutely perfect. And, you know, it's interesting, too, because some of the things we can do that, you know, we can just like lifting weights and you know, you don't start out at 300 pounds, you start out at 50 pounds and 60 pounds. So, you know, you build on your small successes. Receptivity means that when someone pays you a compliment, instead of going, oh, no, that's it, right? It just means saying, oh, thank you so much, right? That's 50 pounds, right? You know, 60 pounds is someone offers to buy you that cup of coffee that you don't know very well. And you say, oh, thank you. I appreciate that. That's 60 pounds, 70 pounds. You know what I'm saying? And so we can start receiving with gratitude the little things, and we start building on our small successes. That also allows us to accept those $5,000 and $10,000 and $15,000, you know, checks that come in for our services. So, you know, it's really building on our small successes. But first, we need to, again, as you brought up, become aware that it's an issue. Mm-hmm.
Well, I love that. That is probably one of the hardest things, like I said, that I've struggled with. But I think as I've intentionally started to overcome it, and reading books like The Go-Giver has really helped with that, to be able to open myself up. Because again, the more connected I am to purpose, the greater my realization is that I can't do this on my own. I've got to have the support of others. I've got to be able to receive. I can't just expend. And never be able to expect to do what I'm really called to do and the impact that I want to have. And one of the things that I wanted to touch base with you briefly was the concept of mentorship. Kind of a subtle theme throughout the book is Pindar is Joe's mentor, the main characters here. Mm-hmm. And all of them actually mentor in a different way. But a lot of people might look at this and say, well, it's, you know, how do you go about finding a mentor? You know, should you intentionally just like try to seek out and hunt down a mentor and tackle them and say, teach me? Or do you just kind of stumble into it like Joe did, where you're just kind of on the right path, even if you don't understand everything, but you're kind of on the right path and you kind of bump into it and then you find a mentor and you take advantage of the opportunity to learn from them? How does that usually work in your experience?
Yeah, I think proactively seeking out mentors is a great idea. I think it's the way we do it that is going to result, that's going to increase our odds of the result we want. So for example, let's say there's someone who is either in your community or someone online or someone who you really have a lot of respect for. What I see a lot of people doing, which I believe is counterproductive, is they'll just say to this person, you know, who they've never really met or have met one time, they'll say, hey, will you be my mentor? Or I need a mentor. Will you mentor me? Well, you know, that's sort of like saying to somebody, hey, will you share with me 40 years of your experience, even though you don't know me from a hole in the wall, right? And you know, it's almost like asking, you know, for the marriage instead of the first date, you know, as they say. And so, and remember, this person, if you want them for a mentor, probably a lot of other people do, and they ask the same way. So this person is busy. So there's nothing that distinguishes you from other people when asking. So, and it can come across maybe as, you know, entitled, or it comes. So here's what I suggest. You can still approach that person absolutely positively, but the way I would do it is more like, you know, Mr. So-and-so or Ms. So-and-so, you know, I know you're very busy. So if this is not something you'd like to do, or even if for whatever reason you'd rather not, I'll totally understand. But I'm wondering, may I ask you one or two very specific questions? Now, when you do that, you've distinguished yourself in a few ways. One is, you know, you approached it in a way, you framed it in such a way that you realize this is a very big thing and you're respecting the process, okay? You also gave them the out or the back door, which is very important. You let them, if you're too busy or if it's just something you'd, for whatever reason, rather not do, I'll totally understand. The out or back door, which is a kind of an emotional escape hatch because people want autonomy. They don't want to feel pressured into doing something, right? So Berg's law of the out or back door says the bigger the out or back door you give someone to take, the less they'll feel the need to take it. So you're not really giving that to them for them to take, although they will if they need to, and that's fine. Sure. But it's really you're wanting to make them comfortable enough with you that they don't feel the need to. In other words, you framed it in such a way that they know you're going to respect their time. Okay. But here's the other thing you did. Okay. You didn't just say, you know, can I pick your brain or can I just, you know, or basically, can I waste your time with a bunch of needless questions? No, even though you would really say that, you said, if I may ask you one or two very specific questions, this says to them that that here's a serious person. Here's a person who knows exactly what they need to ask. They're not going to take up a lot of my time. They're respecting the process. And, you know, they have an agenda. And when I say an agenda in this case, I mean that in a good way, right? Not, oh, they have an agenda. I mean, you know, they have an agenda. They know what they want, right?
Exactly.
So they'll most likely say, yeah, sure, go ahead. Now, not always, but it doesn't have to be always. It doesn't have to be everybody. But mostly, most of the time, that person will absolutely say, sure, go right ahead. Now, you want to make sure, of course, to research that person so you don't ask them something that you could have known the answer to beforehand. Sure. You want to make sure, right? But and then you take, you know, you ask them those questions. You make sure you don't take up needless time. You thank them profusely for their wisdom. Let them know you're going to apply it right away. And if I may, I'll circle back with you to just kind of update you on how things, and they'll say, oh, yeah, please let me know. Right. Okay. Now, immediately after meeting them, getting off the phone, Zoom, in person, whatever it happens to be, my suggestion is to write a handwritten personal thank you note, okay? Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't be long, short and sweet. Dear Mr. So-and-so or dear Ms. So-and-so, thank you so much again for taking valuable time out of your day. Your wisdom was priceless. I look forward to applying it right away. Again, I'll circle back and let you know how things are progressing. Best regards, boom. Put it in an envelope, hand stamp it, send it out. Boom. I would also that day, and is to, you know, you find out what that person's favorite charitable cause is, which is probably you can find that online or you can ask their administrative assistant, what have you. That's pretty easy to do. And make a small, it doesn't need to be anything big, make a small donation in their name.
Oh, that's good.
It'll get back to them because they'll be notified. And you're not doing it to, you know, to kiss up or anything. You're doing it just to, again, communicate that you respect the process and you want to be able to add value to them in a way that they find to be of value. You know what I'm saying? Now,
right.
A couple of weeks later, you circle back and it might be an email, might be a, you know, that you get on the phone, what have you, let them know what's happening. Maybe you have another question. And in time, if a mentor protege relationship is supposed to develop, it will. If right. not, it won't. It might be that was your one time talking to them, but you're going to have some with another person that you might have two or three conversations with and down the line, someone else. And then you may or may not, what have you, find that ongoing, you know, mentor protege relationship. My suggestion is do it like this, but don't be attached to the results. Mm-hmm. Understand that if it's supposed to happen, you know, it's going to happen. You do the best you can. And, you know, we have there's a word in Hebrew called hishtadlus, which is roughly translated as the human effort in partnership with God's will, right? So you That's do good. The best you can, right? Right? And you know it's in God's hands, whether it's supposed to happen or not.
Well, it sounds like the Go-Giver Mentor and is coming out soon. It should be coming out soon. That would be another good addition to the series. Well, and I think that's probably one of the things I picked out in what Pindar said is that interesting statement that the more successful people are, actually, the more accessible and the more willing they are to share basically extend that hand up to help somebody else. And I've had, I'm in real estate development, and I had a real estate, commercial real estate broker tell me, oh, this is a cutthroat business. Nobody will give you, you know, will give you, show you the ropes or anything like that. You just got to go out, dog eat dog, whatever. But every business, which I've been very blessed and fortunate, but every business I've been in, I've been able to have a mentor. And instead of just showing up and talking to a realtor who's just one rung over him or one rung over me, I feel like God's actually helped me. I've actually got a CEO of one of the largest real estate companies in our area who's actually taken me under their wing, and we're working on things together and different things. And so it's always interesting to me. Another point y'all talked about, what you normally see is normally what you get. If you see a world that is out to get you and no one's going to give you a hand up, then you never will get that. But if you go with the right approach and you present yourself to a mentor, just like what you said, I didn't know a lot of these concepts when I did it. So I kind of stumbled through it the first couple of times, but you start to catch on, hey, this is working and this isn't. And yeah. So that is absolutely true. And I would say probably for me, one of the biggest things has been having mentors in my life that have helped me. Has been absolutely incredible.
Absolutely. Same with me. It's an amazing blessing. It really is.
Absolutely. It's like a shortcut to be able to take their wisdom and escape the school of hard knocks.
I've always said when you have a good mentor can cut your learning curve by years. So yeah, absolutely.
Very good. Well, last little point here is just on a personal note, do you have any rituals, like morning rituals or atomic habits or habits that you do? Because you're a successful person. You've wrote a number of books. You've got a whole organization. You've got online courses. You've got so many certifications courses right. that you have. There's so many different things. I was looking through today. I was like, wow, there's so much that's deeper under the surface than just the Go-Giver books, right? Or even just your public keynotes and stuff, which are awesome. But tell me a little bit, what are some things that you do to make yourself successful? How do you do that? What is your secret sauce?
You know, I mean, I'm a voracious reader. I'm a voracious listener. I really do my best to live in gratitude. You know, those are the things I I'm very consistent, I guess, in that I do things the same way. You know, I'm
right.
I always like to say I'm about the most boring person you've ever met. It just happens to work for me. You know, that I enjoy. Somebody looking awesome. Up, if somebody looks at my most exciting things, I read all the time. You know, I love it. Yes.
Well, so on that note, do you have a parting recommendation for some of the books that have impacted you the most?
Oh my gosh. You know, there's really so many in different genres that are just amazing. I love studying human nature because I really believe that when we understand the basics, you know, of why people operate the way they do, it provides us with an understanding of life. You know, and I mean, we're always dealing with other human beings and everything. So if we know the general psychological characteristics, feelings, behavioral traits, which is the definition of human nature, right?
That is, right.
That is basically all humans. Of course, we're all individuals. And at the same time, there are certain driving forces as human beings that we are all part of. Okay. And so I'm a big believer in books on studying human nature. I've been reading a lot lately on, you know, being able to really be open to other ideas. You know, and excuse me for turning my back on you for
just a moment. But you've got a whole bookshelf. Books and books and books.
I always say to people, my house is comprised of books with scattered furniture around.
That's awesome.
So I was reading this book, Think Again, by Adam Grant. Mm. He wrote the book Give and Take. He wrote another book called Originals. This book, Think Again, The Power of Knowing What You Don't Know.
Mm.
Absolutely, it's exquisite. It's a book for the modern times.
Wow.
Where so many people are wrapped up in their own, I'm right, you're wrong, or in politics, I'm right, you're evil, right? You know, and this is a great book on really being able to look deeper and come to an understand. I mean, this is just it's such a fantastic book. Now, there are books such as Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman, which really, when you talk about human nature, why human beings do things and make decisions that seem very illogical and irrational. And the reason why is because we're human beings and we are illogical and irrational many times. Okay. But I mean, things you wouldn't even believe that, and you know, I mean, he just does the thing with the whole study and with the whole, you know, and I mean, books like this are just so, you know, phenomenal. And then you have books like this one written in 1900 by Orison Swett Marden, who is the many people consider him the father of the modern day personal development movement. He was actually the founder of Success Magazine.
Really?
And this book is called Peace, Power, and Plenty. And every page just has absolute gems of wisdom that you can go to any page and it's exactly what you needed to read.
Wow.
And so, you know, I think there's, so I don't know if I can recommend any one because there's so many that, you know,
that was a hard question.
Positive. Well, it's a good question. Yeah. But there's so many that have made a positive difference in my life. You know, you could ask me tomorrow and I'd probably pick three different books.
Gotcha. Well, that is incredible. Thank you for sharing that. And after everyone goes and gets all the Go Giver books and some of your other books and reads those, then they can start in on some of those other recommendations. That is absolutely awesome. And I will be putting into all of our like show notes and everything about links to some of the other programs that you have. I believe you've got some online courses and some books and just a whole lot of resources. I've yet to find someone else who delivers as much free value and as much value in even the paid resources that you have. It's just absolutely incredible. So thank you again so much for your time visiting with us today and sharing your wisdom and shortening our curve a little bit as we develop as entrepreneurs and getting into the flow of being blessed and finding purpose in life and being go-givers.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for your kind words and thank you for having me. You truly honored me. Thank you.
Well, that's a wrap for today. Thank you again so much for tuning in to this podcast episode. Please subscribe if you haven't already, share it with a friend, and check us out on theblessbusiness.com. Thank you so much. Have a blessed day and tune in next time.